Hello and welcome back to 40 days and 40 nights on the Camino with Jamie, the long distance coach. This is your host, this is the author, Jamie Wallace. So today I wake up in Lyon, this lovely city of the north of Spain. And this is my 23rd day, but I'm not, I've just finished 20 days on the Camino de Santiago. And it's 23 days since I've left Scotland. And this morning is, it's a morning of mixed emotions. I know that it's pretty much impossible for me to walk. It's really difficult for me to walk just because of the condition that my feet were now in, and because of the tremendous effort that I've made to get there within such a short period of time into the city. So when I woke up in that morning, I opened my eyes and I looked across, and there was Fortune, who was sleeping on top of his sleeping bag, hugging into his pillow. It was pretty adorable, really, to look at. We got up and then we went for some breakfast together and joined some of the others that we had made friends with in the place. Dylan, I've got Bob Dylan from Italy. He was the last person to join us, and I introduced him to Fortune. So Fortune was the last, after he'd packed everything up and that, he was the last to leave the hostel, the alberg, that day. I had got permission to potentially remain an extra day or two. So the request was made, and I would find out later in the day if it was accepted. Now, because this is such a busy alberg, it's very rare for people to be able to stay more than one night in this place, because just to deal with the flow of people coming through the city. However, when you do have injuries and that, they sometimes make exceptions. So I'd asked if it might be possible to the steward guy who was on duty that day, and I would find out later on that day. So after Fortune had gathered all his belongings and got his big heavy backpack on, ready to move, I left all my stuff there and I just walked him along into the old town where the cathedral is. We stopped and we took some photographs. There was a nice big sign outside the shop where he got his sweatshirt. So we've got some photographs there as well. In fact, we took loads of photographs for different people. And that's what happens. One person does it, everyone wants to do it. So I was hobbling along over to this place, over to where the Camino would, start up for Fortune and his friends. And we hugged each other, and then we parted our ways. And unfortunately, I set him and two other girls on the wrong way, because I just assumed it must have been that way, straight ahead. But no, instead of going straight ahead and to the right, they actually had to turn left. So they had to, we watched them walking back. So yeah, don't take your directions from me. I've never walked the way before. One thing I do know is that if I've walked the wrong ways, then I'll be sure to pass that information on, so that in future you go the right way. So yeah, learn from my mishaps. And this was trying to think. This might have been like Friday or something like that. I'd made plans to kind of stay in Lyon for a couple of days to rest up. However, I knew that the boots that I had that I was wearing, they were probably not serving me that well. They were probably part of the cause of me getting the blisters. I think what I'd done is I'd sprayed them with like waterproofing, and I think I'd actually blocked out the ability for the boots to breathe. So it kind of made them redundant, and it was starting to cause me a lot of problems in allowing my feet to be able to breathe properly, hence the blisters and stuff that I was getting. So that obviously when you're there, you don't want to like throw them away. So I was able to recycle the boots. I put the boots into where a kind of box where people could go and choose if they needed an extra pair or something like that. So kind of like recycling donation. So I donated my boots. But then later on that day, I took them back because I just decided that just in case, as a backup, I might maybe need them. However, this time when I said goodbye to Fortune, I didn't cry this time. I'd learned. And I wasn't even feeling sad. I felt that I'd done what I had to do, you know, and I was glad that I had actually been able to make it to Lyon all the way. And then for that moment to be able to see him one last time. And I think for me, I was satisfied, and I proved it to myself that I could achieve anything. If it's meant for you, it won't go by you, as a saying we have in Scotland. And that was one of these moments that, although it looked impossible, he was 3 days ahead of me, I was still able to achieve the impossible. And I think, and knowing as well that I still had good feelings. I had feelings of love. I had all these feelings. I did have them within me. These feelings that I'd closed away from my life over in the last decade or so, last 7 to 10 years, all as a result of just a relationship breakdown. And my relationship with the kind of the gay community, the scene in Glasgow, or maybe even like internationally. I've never really analysed it that much, but just knowing that I needed to find my own way in life. And now I was on my way to really understanding me and where my direction in life. So this was all part of that learning experience, and being able to re-energize these feelings within me that, you know, I was a good person and that I've had all these, I was normal. I was just a normal person. I didn't feel the need to have to harbor or hide these feelings or emotions that is maybe in society had kind of forced me, or I believed had forced me to hide them. It's quite a difficult one because everyone sees the world through their own eyes. But I was glad that I had made it to Lyon to see see Fortune one last time. And I needed him to know that he was worth every second of the pain and danger that I had endured. You know, and it's something that I had never done before. I've wrote here, I followed my heart. And that's true. When you walk along the Camino de Santiago, I know a lot of people do it for different reasons, but the one kind of goal that I think subliminally that we're all following, and it's written in the murals, it's in the graffiti, and even in the pathways, people put their marks down, and a lot of those marks is love. You'll see that the hashtag love is the way, and follow your heart. There's a lot of that, and it kind of subliminally you're taking all that in. and it helps you to, it helped me to open up. And it's all part of the experience of walking the Camino de Santiago. And I was able to follow my heart, something I never had never ever done before. I think I'd, in the past, I'd always stuck to convention and what other people thought I should be doing, and never wanting to stand on toes, and never, I don't know, it's just not being myself. So by following my heart, I'd unleashed that something within me that enabled me to move ahead in life, or start to move ahead in life, and understanding that I was following my heart. Heart, mind, gut, that this was the time for my heart to lead, you know? And that's the lesson that I learned on the way, pretty much, was to follow my heart. Sometimes we need to risk losing everything and to follow our heart. That was the lesson that I learned, I think, up until this point. And I, as I write this, I've wrote, I do miss him dearly. But I also know I'll be so happy to hear of his news on reaching Santiago. So I was just looking forward to him getting to his destination now. It's as if I've met my destination and greater understanding of myself. And now he needed to achieve his destination, which, you know, obviously geographically is Santiago de Compostela, but obviously he also has a psychological destination that he's also trying to meet as well, and to sort out things in his head. So I wrote, I'll pray for him to finish. I know I'm in his prayers, and he was praying for me every day. This morning, he wore the patriarchal cross that I got him in Hontanas. And yesterday, one of the volunteers had recognized it and had told me of his experience when he got to the town, and he was welcomed warmly by the priest who took him in for the night. So even like wearing symbols and things like that, it can bring back memories on other people, and then it just creates a new opportunity to find out a little bit more about them. So once Fortune had left, my next task was to look for a doctor. I was really worried about my feet, because it was practically impossible to walk. It was just pure grit that made me be able to kind of move at all. So I remember before I went looking for a doctor, I remember there was a group of the girls that hadn't left, they were staying. So we just went to there's like a little cafe place just at the corner on the right hand side, and we had some breakfast in there and shared some stories and things like that. So that was nice to kind of just chat to some more people. And maybe that's part of the reason why I wasn't feeling so sad as well, because I had company that time. So looking for this doctor, obviously you go on your phone and you think, well, where's the hospital? So there's one actually just a few minutes walk away. So I went to there. It was a nice big place. Unbeknown to me, there's a difference in where you go. They've got their private hospitals in Spain, and then they have their public health centres, which are hospitals, but basically for anyone to go to, whereas your private ones is just for your insured people, I guess. So, and arrived at the first hospital, I just showed them everything I had. So I had my insurance card, and I had my European card. And they says, oh, you need to go to the public health centre. So this was a private clinic. So I made my way there. They called me a taxi because there was no way I was able to walk a across the city. So they got the taxi for me. The taxi took 3 times longer this morning than it took to take me back. So it took, yeah. So the guy just went on a busman's holiday and took me all around the city to get to this place. The Centro de Salud. When I got to the Centro de Salud, they sent me back. They sent me to the Clinica San Francisco. So they weren't going to take me in, and I had to go to this other place. This other place was a private place. Oh, and I'm losing the will to live. Now, the taxi dropped me off just I had to get the taxi outside the health centre. I had to walk to a certain place, and it was murder just trying to walk to this place. I remember the pain in my and the tears in my eyes trying to have to walk, and the frustration that no one seems to want to like deal with me. I'm just getting passed from pillar to post, and I thought, this is never going to end, and I'm never going to get better. And you can see where this is going. I'm having another meltdown moment, like I did when I was walking across the desert plains before the hunters came and got me. So I got dropped off. Eventually, I got picked up by a taxi, and I got dropped off outside the Clinica San Francisco. And there I spent 2 or 3 hours. They had an international advisor, and I think this is maybe the problem. I think the language barrier was the issue, which is why they didn't want to deal with me. And I think probably my Scottish accent just made them hesitant to deal with me. That's why I think they chucked me over to the private place. So the international advisor there, she helped me with all the translations. She ensured that I'd filled out all the right forms, made sure they were all completed, made sure she took my €50 deposit. She was very busy. This was a very busy place, and they dealt with a lot of international pilgrims. And she was really personable and very attentive, you know. So although she was really busy, when you were in her midst, you were her prime concern. And I learned my skill from that woman, you know. It's like to be in the moment with that person, just to deal with that person, to listen to them and not to be distracted. And that's where I got that skill from. I was exactly at this moment. And she then sent me over to the doctor twice. The nurse treated my feet, and they took a couple of x-rays just to ensure that my foot wasn't too damaged. There was no kind of bone damage or that. There was no damage or no infection found. Really just a lot of swelling. Now this was the time when she says, right, you can't walk. You're not allowed to walk. You'll never walk again, basically is what I heard. And then she said, for 3 days. So I was like, oh, right. I thought she went, oh my God, like your feet are just about to die off on you. But no, I had to rest for 3 days. Absolutely no walking whatsoever. So I got a doctor's letter. I was given the x-rays in a little bag to take away. I was given a prescription. So I had to go to the pharmacy across the road to collect the paracetamol and some anti-inflammatory pills and painkillers, and got a taxi back to the alberg, and I checked in there. And there the volunteer who'd spoken to one of the sisters and said I could stay a bit longer if I needed to. So that was good. So all bases had been covered. My feet were being seen to, they were being fixed, and I would add some shelter for the next few days at least. However, I decided actually I would probably prefer to get my own place to stay. So I looked around on my phone, and I found this place called the Albany, of course, Scottish type name. I wanted to stay there. And the Albany was right in the square overlooking the cathedral and in the hubbub of everything that was going on. So there was only room left in that area, so I was just really happy to be able to get a book that. And only this morning, so when we'd walked past the place, I'd been talking to Fortune about this place and just saying about how Scottish this building, you know, the name of this place was. So when I got in, I dried all my clothes and I retrieved my boots. I had to ice pack my feet, so to keep the swelling down on my feet, I had to keep them in ice, under ice for a while. And then I took a siesta. Got some snacks from the vending machines and took my pills that day. Then later on in the evening, again, I had to ice pack my feet again, and then I went for dinner. At dinner, I'd met a German, two Canadians, two French people, and a Spanish person. And during the evening, alongside the square, outside in the square, so of course the square was always busy with locals, there was a band playing and there was people dancing in the square. It was nice to hear, and where my bed was located in this alberg, they had bars up on the window so no one could get in or out, but I could see exactly, I was on the level of the ground, so I could see exactly what was going on in the square, and people just, children running around playing, they're playing fighting and playing games, and it kind of just made me think about my youth and what we used to be like. You know, running around the fields, building kind of tree houses or ramps or just kind of being kids and being able to kind of just have some fun, you know. And that was me until I drifted off to sleep after having had dinner and that. And just watching the world go by and drift off. And that was my first rest day. In the next episode, I'll talk about a second rest day. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Tune in again tomorrow for the next episode.